Coming up very shortly, Brendan Devaney will be joining us to reflect on the weekend's GEA action and to preview the DL debate, which is broadcast tonight. And if you want to get involved in that conversation, you know the text numbers. Now, 10 years after floods caused an estimated €25 million in damage at Letterkenny University Hospital, an official report into the incident has yet to be presented by health board officials. Councillor Jerry McMonagle is demanding that the reports into two separate instances of flooding at the hospital be made public. You'll remember the first flood at the hospital occurred in July 2013. A nearby drain burst its banks during heavy rain. And then just over a year later, August 2014, major damage was caused again when the new ED, brand new it was at that stage, was hit by heavy floods following torrential downpours. The chair of the Regional Health Forum West, Councillor Jerry McMonagle, joins us on the programme now, the man making these calls. Good morning, Jerry. Thanks for taking the time out today.
Good morning, Greg.
Right, I mean, I suppose we could say they've done an investigation. We haven't had any major flood incidents since. All's good in the hood. Why is it so important, do you think, though, that this report is published?
Well, it's like you said, Greg, it cost €25 million of damage, and that in itself would merit a report as to what happened. If we just go back, it was part of the new emergency department building. It had been built. There was concerns even when it was being built that it was prone to flooding. There had been already a few near misses to the old hospital. So one would like to think that when it was being built, that the proper conditions were applied, the proper works that would have been put in place to ensure that the flooding didn't occur. It wasn't that long opened. And then with the building there, it was built in a hole, and then it had corridors linking with the older hospital, and that acted as a conduit for the water. And then we had all the upheaval we had. We lost our emergency department, our radiology, x-ray department, the records were affected, and the daycare services. And this is for a major hospital in Donegal. So I think we're entitled to a report as to what happened, how did it happen. We know now how it happened, and we've seen since, and the remedial works that have taken place have worked quite well to date, and hopefully that'll continue. But I think we're due a report and an explanation as to why this happened.
Now, not surprisingly, we're being told, as seems to be kind of a familiar story here, that it's complicated, there's legal issues that need to be looked at, different parties involved. But this is 11 years ago. Surely at this point, any hurdles that need to be overcome would have been overcome if there was any will to actually get this out into the public domain.
Well, within a year of the report being initiated, we were told that it would be quite quickly published. And ever since, we've been asking periodically for updates, and they've been using the legal aspect that we're reviewing it to ensure there's no legal actions or every avenue's covered. But if there is to be legal proceedings, then surely 11 years on, we will have identified those legal proceedings or whatever other type of proceedings need to take place. And if there was shoddy workmanship, if planning wasn't adhered to, and we've heard all the rumours. Now, this investigation is supposed to have looked into all of that. And as you say, 11 years on, we surely should be in a position to publish the report and take whatever actions, legally or otherwise, may be necessary to recoup some of the $25 million that's been spent to date.
I mean, there are numerous reports that have been commissioned that are gathering dust. You know, there's a very important report, I think, in terms of planning that has been on the desk of many a housing minister still to be published. Now we have this that would give us some accountability, some answers, you know, hopefully lessons to be learned from it. Who's to say, not just here, elsewhere. Is this a Donegal thing, Councillor, whereby we commission these reports into really quite critical matters and then we're stonewalled in terms of why they can't be published or not? Or does this happen elsewhere? Is it just a Donegal thing?
No, it's certainly not a Donegal thing. I think, and you named a couple of reports there, but I mean, there's many, many more. If there's an investigation, if there's a report, it has to come, first of all, to the government they look at it, look at all the legalities of that, and then, as you say, it gets moved about from department to department. The planning review is one such instance of that. We had the mother and babies, you know, we're having the defective concrete blocks and where the, all of that's going.
There's a report into institutional abuse in this county as well. Where is that?
It always be reviewed and then it be looked at and it gets moved about and legalities are brought into it. And that seems to then put it on the long.
But what doesn't make sense to me is that parties which could come out unfavourably from these reports have the power not to have them published. That's worrying.
Yeah, that is very worrying. And it has always been the case that we have asked regularly for the planning review report in Donegal to be published. It's sitting with the minister now for almost 10 years, something like this flood report, and no one is taking the initiative. Nobody's biting the bullet in this. Nobody's saying, right, let's put this report out there, warts and all, and let the people make up their own mind. And if there's repercussions or there's court cases out of it, so be it. But we need to ensure that these type of things don't happen again.
You were able to take this up directly with Tony Canavan, who is the CEO of the Sciota Hospital Group. His response, you know, kind of sounds like, I understand your concerns. I think it should be published. But, you know, life isn't that easy. It's complicated. Where does it go from here?
Well, the remedial works that took place identified the shortcomings, and they have shown that once they've been in place, that they have worked. So if that was the starting point for ensuring that the hospital doesn't flood again and it seems to be working, then why were them type of investigations not taken? Or were they taken? Because we had, as I said, the early warnings. We had previous flooding situations where the flood was just diverted. So we knew that this was a problematic site that was prone to flooding. Why were the necessary works and steps not put in place to ensure that flooding wouldn't occur?
All right.
And I think that's what they don't want to expose or explain.
Okay. Now, before I let you go, as you're a Sinn Féin rep and your involvement in the JPC, and because it's in the papers and coming up at meetings today about Owen O'Brien's tweet at the weekend, which has proved controversial, a couple of things I want to say beforehand. I'm not talking about the politics of it, because I think most people know the point he was trying to make, that this decision is going to lead to evictions. It depicts, by the way, Gardaí involved with masked men involved in an eviction, by the way, and it was he had the words, no words needed. So as to say, and also I want to acknowledge that there seems to be people on social media more upset about that image than actually there are of people losing their homes. So all of that, I get it, okay, and I want people to understand I get it, because people get, when you challenge political parties, people can get quite defensive. With all that being said, though, you know, sometimes when you're explaining you're losing, on reflection, do you think maybe he should have put a bit of context into this image, Gerry, or perhaps not even used it, especially ahead of Garda conferences, and the fact that it wasn't Leo Varadkar, Micheál Martin, Eamon Ryan or anyone else the focus of this image, it was Gardaí, and it was Gardaí who've been involved in policing evictions in the past. Don't get me wrong, I acknowledge all of that. But given the fact that he might have to work with Gardaí in the next government, and given the fact you know what guards are going through on the streets, do you think it was perhaps a misstep to at least not contextualise it in the tweet, or do you stand behind it and him 100%?
Look, knowing Owen O'Brien and his passion for the role that he has and spokesperson of 1,000 and what he's dealing with on a daily basis, I don't believe it was an attack on the Gardaí. I think it was a very clumsy attempt to highlight the cruelty of this government and its actions. I don't think his tweet was intended to attack the Gardaí, but it was a clumsy attempt, I think, to highlight, the cruelty of the government in relation to the eviction ban being lifted and their lack of concern for the amount of people and families that this is going to put stress onto and make them homeless. And I think that's where he was coming from. as I say, if he thought this morning that he would have caused the furore, would he have done it? No. Was an attack on the Gardaí. I certainly, hand in heart, don't believe that. But I think it was a clumsy attempt to sort of, you know, flag up the distress that the lifting of the eviction ban is going to cause an awful lot of families in the time ahead.
Yeah, and well, I think sometimes,
I see that. Yeah. I see that every day in my council work, as do I'm sure other elected reps.
Yeah, and I don't want to, and this shouldn't be a distraction from the main issue, because as I say, I have noted that some people who've never commented on people being evicted have commented on this. I get that, right? But I do also understand and recognise there's an awful lot of Gardaí in very tough positions out there. And also, sometimes who likes and retweets and quotes your comments can be an indication that maybe you missed the mark, if that makes sense. But he hasn't. He said it wasn't about the guards, but he hasn't retracted it or deleted it. But listen, as I say, I just wanted your views in relation to it, and I think you've responded to that. But the real issue here is people losing their homes and not having a roof over their head, and I don't think anyone from any political background is going to lose sight of that.
No, look, I work with the Gardaí. He's chair of the Donegal Joint Policing Committee on a regular basis, almost daily, and I acknowledge the pressures that they're under, and sometimes they have to take part in some unsavoury types of duty. But Owen's tweet, and as I said, I think it was clumsy, but I don't think it, and I know hand in heart, it was an attack on the ordinary Gardaí, who he respects an awful lot, and we all do. What we need is, and I think people use this as a political football and a way of getting away from the reality here and the distress that the eviction ban is going to cause hundreds and hundreds of families in the time ahead. And it's something that we all care about. And maybe we, Owen, in reflection, will acknowledge that they could have put the tweet a bit better.
All right, listen, Councillor McMonagall, thanks as always for your time. And on to the show, we welcome Brendan Devaney, presenter of Highland Radio's DL Debate. Hey, Bren.
Yes, Greg, how are you?
I'm all right. So are we holding you back or anything? Everything all right there?
No, Alexa wouldn't listen to me there. She doesn't like the sound of my voice.
Well, apparently a quarter of us have to dumb down our accent for Alexa.
She doesn't want to switch you off, you see. I think that's it.
Congratulations on your appearance on the BBC podcast. What's it called again? GAA
Social.
Sorry, I know it, but it just couldn't come to me. We've talked a little bit about what you talk about in the podcast here. It's you're an open enough person anyway, but it's had a huge reaction and it's going to impact people in a positive way, I think. So, well done to you and the team behind it.
No problem. Yeah, Greg, it's a bit of a strange thing going into those subjects, because normally, well, for one, now I'm often asking questions, or it's just GAA, but that was kind of more a look back at life and life in general now. And it was a bit overwhelming, actually. The messages have been unreal. Like, people have been so kind. You know, when you hear it back, then you think, I could have said this better or that better.
Nah, don't worry. You never listen back. That's nonsense.
No, I listened to it once.
One take, that's it. And if it's not good, it's not good. But no, it is. Listen, and we're always our worst critic. Did you feel better yourself in sort of, not, you know, venting a bit, do you know what I mean? Sometimes, I think particularly as lads, and I don't think you're as bad as many of us, that, you know, we bottle an awful lot of stuff up, but then it's nice then if you can get it out there, especially if it might benefit other people as well. Did you get a benefit in that way from it, Brendan, or are you open enough book anyway that you're a chatter anyway?
But Greg, that's what I'm saying. I thought then that maybe the way you were trying to put your whole life into one, and I was trying to express how I felt at that time. And listen, Greg, that man was playing for Donegal in his 20s. He's a very different person to me now. And I was trying to just, I suppose, examine that and what was going through my head when I was playing in that. And I didn't want it to be overly negative, but I would have been very hard on myself on that, obviously. And I was just trying to,
like, I have my own theories on that as a young lad, you know. And there's some quite interesting insights into it, and about how your performance is connected to how you felt, and wanting to switch off and on and all. And as I say, you know, even in broadcasting, I felt the same way myself in that regard. And, it, you know, a lot of people will relate to that. And then you talk about the awful loss of that you incurred last year as well. As I say, I have no issue cross promoting. The only one thing I will say, I think it's been said on social media and during that podcast that you need to do more behind the mic work stuff. Did I hear you mention the Highland Radio DL debate? No, I did not, Brendan. And that is a black spot in your book. You've got a black card for that one.
The Highland was mentioned.
Was
yes.
it? All honestly, right, okay.
if I had another 10 minutes, I would have got you. Now, I shouldn't even going to mention in the middle of it. But, you know, Greg, obviously talking about the tragedy in that was tough. But it's important to remember them people, and I suppose the people, you know, that have helped us at that time and that. I felt a bit bad then. I didn't maybe thank more people then, because normally, Greg, if you do something, it's been and gone. But because there was so much interest in this, it's almost like one of the moments where you could have said this, and this. But it's done now. And I suppose the good news story, Greg, is we sponsored a couple of children off the back of it.
Brilliant.
Two people have come on to me and says, give me the link. I want to sponsor a child through Plan International. And the joke about the boat in it, whereas there was talk of saving for a college fund, and I was buying a boat. Now, I know, Greg, you know about this, but...
You were just so close. You were so close.
Here's what's happened since then. A guy has offered to buy me a boat.
Brilliant. Good stuff. Take that offer. And where are you gonna use it, though?
I don't know. Maybe it's too many stout at night or something. I got text from a fella saying, Don't be thinking boat as in some kind of big boat. I mean something very basic, like a rib or something. But he was like, hey, me and you have to talk. I'll sort the boat. So I'm like, are you sure about this?
No, listen, come here. And especially with your family, you'll love it. Because I know you were just on the brink last year. So we'll have you out in the water this year one way or other. Brilliant stuff, Brent.
Go for a race. Yeah.
Come here. I'll have to get my engine started first. Come here before... I enjoyed the two games yesterday. What's your reflection on them? I think I like boring games, or I like boring boxing matches. I don't really need it to be all show and other, because I try and look at different elements of the game that or a fight or something that's, you know, that I find entertaining, or a game of snooker or whatever it could be. Have we established the top four teams in the country that we need to keep an eye out this year after the league?
I think so, Greg. I suppose this one is a bit strange. To play a league final with championships coming the following week, and that is made everything a bit strange, because there normally is a huge break in the championship, and there always used to be back in the day a massive break. It could be 6-7 weeks where at times where you really, you know, the league, you were just moving along, and then you lifted it for this huge fitness and training of the championship, particularly the first few weeks of training there. So the fact that teams are playing now, I think a lot of sides, it was a run out. I don't know, it's kind of meaningless to actually win it now. It's all about promotion. So for Dublin and Derry, both back in the top flight where they wanted to be, and deservedly so. I mean, they're two top teams, and they're in your top four or five.
Did we learn more about Derry or Dublin yesterday?
I don't know, I suppose goals killed them, Greg. I mean, if you look at the points tally, very, very low for Dublin. So Derry are getting better at what they do. They just got opened up and the goals killed them. So, I mean, that'll be refined now in the championship. I mean, for Rory Gallagher, was he that worried about winning the Division 2? I don't think so. But certainly, if you look at a team like him, that could be their Achilles heel if they're conceding goals. So it's a massive lesson for them to learn now. Going into the championship now. I was down with Kieran Green at his wee boy's birthday party, so we were watching them on the TV running about after kids. So I have to get Sunday game on the iPlayer again there to have a proper look at it.
Yeah, all right, good stuff. So on the show, Ger Tracy will be going through all of the sport with you as well. So he knows his stuff, top GEA man. A new feature, Life Stories. All right, this is actually, to some extent, turning the tables a little bit, Bren. And I think, you know, from the position you're coming from, it leaves you, in a very good position to interview people as well. So your first guest in this new feature.
Yeah, Nadine Doherty is coming on. She's a former Donegal St. Junior star. She's played everywhere. Her career is absolutely phenomenal, and she's a brilliant person on top of that. You know, I was out at the, I compared a night for St. Union's ladies there a while back. It was like a reunion night, and they basically bossed the football in Donegal in those early years, you know, championships and Ulsters and got the All Ireland Club final and that. But Nadine would have played for them. She actually made her debut for St Union Seniors when she was 12. It seems crazy. She made her debut for Donegal Senior Ladies when she was 15. And she's captained most of the teams she played for. She played in New York for a couple of years, won championships there, won championships in Dublin with Nafina, captaining teams, and same at St. Pat's Drumcondra when she was doing her teacher training up there. She played basketball, played soccer. Just a phenomenal woman. She landed back, actually, in 2003 when Donegal won the All-Ireland Junior title. My sister was captain then, but Nadine, you know, sometimes timing can just be right, and it's brilliant for her. She's a deputy head up in Dublin there, and she also does loads of media stuff. She's involved in the GAA. She works with RTE in that as well, and she's on many boards. So that night I was doing the compare. I was taking different groups of girls up to talk, but just even talking there, she's such a good way where. And I said there that night, here, listen, I have to get you on for a chat. So she's coming on first guest. Colin McFadden, one of our heroes of 2012, he's coming on next week. So it's just in between the time of championship and that, Greg, where we haven't got as much going on the pitch as such for Donegal. I just wanted to maybe highlight a few of our former stars and everything they're doing and what they're doing now.
Yeah, I think it's a brilliant idea, as you say. All right, okay, that's Nadine Doherty, Ger Tracy, Brendan Devaney, all coming up for you live here on Highland Radio just after the 7 p.m. News. You can podcast it too on Highland Radio. And the Deal Debate in association with Sarah's Kitchen at Sister Sarah's in Letterkenny. Brent, listen, again, congratulations. If people want to listen to the podcast, you can go to BBC Sounds. It's an app on your Android or Apple devices, and you can listen to it there. It is well worth a listen. Go ahead, Brent.
Greg, just quick one. Our hurlers were in the league final at the weekend. Listen,
I didn't hear the result. How did you get on?
We have to keep it all. Our minors won as well, but just in the hurlers, don't expect them to be in the Division 2B final. Now, it's somewhere, Division 2A, massive step up, and I think they're beaten by Meath, but they still give a good account of themselves. And it's just the progression of Donegal hurling is phenomenal. Division 2B was a step up that Donegal weren't really able for many years. Now they're very stable. They're actually pushing to go to 2A. So just like they just say, still well done to Mickey McCann and his team. There's interviews up on the Highland site there. Just from the game, they're getting ready for the Nicky Rackard now as the championship comes ahead.
All right, listen, take care of yourself, Brent. Thanks very much indeed. All right, Brendan Devaney, as I say, or as we said, he's live with you this evening after the 7 o'clock news. Okay, delighted to welcome onto the show this morning, Daniel O'Donnell. Good morning to you, Daniel. Thanks so much for chatting to us here.
Thanks, Greg. How are you doing?
I'm doing fantastic, and congratulations on a couple of fronts. Firstly, had a few people I know well at the concert last week. Absolutely loved it. Class act, as always, from you, Daniel, and the rest of the artists that you showcased. And also, great show on Friday. I've only seen bits and bobs, but it's great to see country music showcased on such a platform. And what a lovely honour for you and some of your friends to be honoured by On Post. How does it feel?
Well, you know, it's amazing, really. I suppose I never thought that my face would be on a stamp. It's kind of unbelievable, really, you know, that the stamps can go anywhere now. They can go all over the world. So, yes, it's a great honour. It's a great honour for country music, too, to be, you know, linked with such an honour. And I think it's testament to what country music has meant to the Irish public. You know, there's an awful lot of people that have enjoyed country music for many, many years. So I suppose there's five of us, you know, that are honoured or on the stamps. But I think country music in general has been, you know, applauded, not just us. But I feel very privileged that I'm one of the five that was chosen.
Yeah, and it's great for the industry, I think, and anyone in it, that country music is front and centre and showcased to the entire population, not just those who have a love of it, although they are great in number. You know what I mean? It's good to see it being promoted for what it is.
Absolutely. And just you mentioned about the concert and the Mount Errigal. We had a great night, and thanks to everybody that attended after 3 years. It was a long time to wait. And thanks to Highland as well. And of course, you know, I go back and say that it was Pio who asked me, I suppose it must be 4 years ago now, would I do this concert to celebrate the 30th anniversary of my opening Highland in 1990, and it was all arranged, and sadly Pio didn't get to see the concert, you know, that we had, but he was very well remembered and always will be remembered by many of us that had a great affection for him. So it was a celebration for Highland, but also a tribute to Pio and all of the other acts. I feel very, very privileged to, you know, share the stage with the younger people too. You know, the four of them were just super. I think anybody that was there would say the same thing. And it was just lovely to be doing the show again.
Is there any other genre of music, and this is not to detract from others, but to elevate country, where there is that support from established artists bringing others through? And it was funny, you mentioned the late, great Pio McCann. It was during his a tribute show, we had stories of people getting their first start here, there and everywhere. And you're continuing that, Daniel. Again, I don't think there's another genre of music that you have established acts that use their platform to try and give others assistance. And I think it's really quite a remarkable part of it all.
Most of it is very, very much a part of country music. And I think that, you know, down through the years, that has been apparent, you know, that singers that are established would encourage younger ones. And I definitely am all for the younger people coming along, because that's what's going to keep country music alive, you know. Yeah. I remember when I started in 1983, when I was starting out my own, and, you know, people were thinking then that there was no future for country music. And how wrong they were. And then you have all the others that came after me that bring new life into it, you know, none more than Nathan. You know, when he came along, it was like a rebirth again. And, you know, that'll happen time and time again. And, you know, they will bring a new audience to the music. And, you know, myself and David recorded Don't Take the Good Times for Granted that Shuni Crampsey wrote for us. And it just is such a great song. And, you know, to be able to have somebody, like, I'm 61 and David is only, I think, is 24. And, you know, that gap is bridged by music. Mm. And that's not just for the singers, that's for the public as well. Music crosses all boundaries. Mm-hmm. And that's the lovely thing about it. But I always encourage young people, if I can at all, or if I hear them on something, you know, that I hear a record, if I can make contact with them. I just put myself, not that I think I'm any great shakes now, but I suppose I've been lucky to have the career I've had. But I think back to when I was starting, if I got encouragement, you know, I think it's very important. Yeah. To do that.
I mean, you talk of luck, but your success comes from much more than that, because I think it's about you and the way you carry yourself. And I think anyone looking on, if they follow some of your examples in that regard, it helps with the luck side of things too, I think, Daniel, is what I'm going to, trying to say. You blazed a trail, and others follow. Amongst those also that blazed a trail was Margot, and she... Yeah. One of the very few recipients of a very prestigious honour, and quite rightly so. Perhaps not another person outside of yourself as deserving as Margot and the honour she received.
Well, definitely she did deserve it, you know, and not just because she's my sister, but, you know, she has done so much throughout her career, and done so much for people as well. People love, the people that love Margot absolutely adore her, you know, and love her music. And she has a huge connection with those that have been followed. This, I hope this award continues. And, you know, Margaret was thrilled to get it. She absolutely was thrilled to get it. And, you know, I think never do we become blasé when we get awards, no matter where they're from. You know, to be applauded for something that you love is amazing, and that's really what we are. That's what's happening for us, and what happened for Margaret on Friday night. But I do think, you know, it was well deserved, and I suppose Tom got it, thank God, and Philomena got it. You know, it's nice that people get these awards while they're still here to appreciate and be appreciated. All too often we leave it. But there's a lot of people, I suppose, like Larry and Brian Cole and Gene Stewart, just to name but a few, and there's more, that are gone, that I would like to see being honoured, you know, even though they're not here. Maybe their families could have the award. And then you have the like of Susan McCann, and, you know, there's a lot of people that have, before me, made country music what it is, and a lot after me that have made a huge impact. So, you know, it's really nice that this role of honour is there, and I hope it continues.
Yeah, indeed. And finally, obviously, Daniel, you were on the Late Late Show on Friday. Everyone wants you to take the job. And you have made some comments in relation to that in terms of how they might choose the right person for the job. And I have to say, I do agree fully in what you said in that regard. If the stars aligned, if you got the call, even for 6 months, would you do it, Daniel? Would you?
No, I wouldn't.
Come on.
I wouldn't.
3 months?
No, I really wouldn't. You know, no, I wouldn't do it for a week.
That's only one show, Daniel.
I wouldn't. Yeah, do you know what? I just feel that you need to know your strengths, but you also need to know your limitations. And I feel that the Late Late Show is something that you have to have somebody that's able, I suppose, to be light and heavy, you know. And I just would not, I wouldn't have the knowledge to speak to politicians and people like that. You need to have a huge amount of information in your head. And that's why I say you need to know your limitations. Now, my limitations don't hold me back, but they let me do what I feel I can do.
Yeah, I get you.
And that's the important. It's just like singing a song. You know, I think it's important to know what you're able to sing.
Yeah,
I wouldn't dream of singing them.
Yeah, I get you. Sorry, the line dropped a little bit there, but I understand what you're saying. But it's nice to be.
I'm not going to be considered for that. But even that people say it,
that's what I was going to say.
It's kind of flattering, but.
Do you have someone you'd like to see have a go at it? Or, see, there's so many great candidates, I suppose you could say. But
There are so many great candidates. I love Dahi O'Shea myself. And I think Dahi would be able to, you know, he'd be able for the lighter side. And I'm sure he'd be able for the interviews that needed a lot of attention and a lot of seriousness too. But I mean, there's a lot of people there, obviously. I haven't really heard that he'd been mentioned. Now, he's obviously he's very successful at what he's doing, but I do think he would do it well, just from somebody that I haven't seen much said about. But I'm sure those that are going to pick will pick somebody that they feel is right. And that's what I said in the paper.
Yeah.
You know, there's all this thing about it should be a woman. It should be a woman if she's the right person for the job. You know, we're this thing of equality. Of course, we're all equal, but you must never put somebody into something that they're not going to be comfortable with.
Yeah.
That's a strain and a stress on somebody. If you find yourself standing in a spot that you're not fit for.
Yeah, and very finally, you know, when it changed hands the last time, it was a very, very different world. I fear for the backlash for many different reasons, regardless of who gets it the next time. I think I fear that it could be a short-lived stint, and we could see the end of it, because we live in a world now where everyone has an opinion and everyone has a platform to express that opinion, and it might be guided by different things that are in their head. And I just think it's going to be a tough gig for whoever takes it on, Daniel, for those reasons.
Yeah, well, do you know what I would say, Greg, is that I don't think the majority speaks about everything. I don't think the majority speak. The majority enjoy, and the minority speak.
All right, I think that's profound. On those words, thanks for your time. I know you're up to your ears, as you always are, so we appreciate you making your time for us available, Daniel. Have a lovely day. Congratulations again.
Thank you.
Congratulations to Margot and everyone else. Thank you very much indeed. That is the literally one and only Daniel O'Donnell. Don't forget, if you want to take off up to a value of €10,000, you can take yourself to the Highland Radio website and enter our holiday draw. You've got just a couple of days, 3 days in fact, it's 2 days and a bit if the truth be told, to get your tickets. There's a €10,000 holiday voucher and also then €5,000 cash in spending money. You can have one big splurge of a holiday, or you can have multiple holidays to the value of €10,000. Just check out our website, highlandradio.com, and you could be availing of some of those flights out of Knock, Dublin, Belfast, wherever the fancy takes you. Tickets are €10. That's the most you'll pay for one ticket. If you just want to have a dabble, you can buy six for €50. So if you want to get them yourself or group in with other people and get them cheaper, 10 for 80. You can do that too. Whichever way, don't miss out. Grab a few family and friends together and you can get tickets for €8. A mostly dry day today with a mix of cloud and hazy sunny spells. Some spots of light rain and drizzle will occur. Highest temperatures of 12 to 13 degrees in moderate to fresh south to southeast winds easing by evening. Now, any of you who are familiar with the show would be aware that we have Dr. Joe Kelly on the show on a regular basis talking history. Not regularly enough, I don't think. And one of the people we focused on in one of the shows was Kay McNulty, who is a remarkable individual. And what I might actually do with the times that are in it, I might actually try and dig out that interview and make it available on our website, because Kay McNulty is going to be honoured, her legacy, with a new memorial. Eamon McFadden is working with the Chrysler Community Association on this project and joins us now. Good morning to you, Eamon. Thank you very much for your time today.
Hiya, Greg. Good morning to you.
Now, the event takes place on Monday, April 3rd at 6:30 p.m. Tell us what's happening and what's being unveiled, Eamon, and then we'll talk a little bit about Kay, I suppose.
Yeah, sure, Greg. So, yeah, tonight we're unveiling a memorial here in Chrysler in the village, just at an area known as the Corner of the Gardens, just as you approach the village here. And it is just something we've been working on for the last while. We remember a number of years ago, people remember that they had a big day to commemorate remember Brady Gallagher while she was still alive, and that was a great success. Now, sadly, Kay McNulty has passed away since, but she was born in Chrysler, and we think it's time that maybe there was something done to recognise the legacy that she left in science and technology here and her home village as well. So we've been working with the National Plaques Commemoration Committee, who have commissioned a piece, and also with the Chrysler Community Association as well. So we have a nice interpretive panel and a commemorative plaque, all built on a nice handmade stone plinth that we're going to unveil tonight here. Something that will hopefully maybe give people an insight into who Kay was, what type of person she was, her achievements, and maybe help inspire the next generation of young people in STEM subject science, technology, engineering and mathematics as well. So that's what's really happening tonight.
And we were talking about people like Margot, a trailblazer in music, Kay, a trailblazer in her chosen area, and a big push on to get more women in particular into STEM subjects. Kay, as you mentioned, has sadly passed on, but she'll be well represented because there will be people visiting, I understand, and also too, of course, her deep roots, her family connections in and around Chrysler.
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. You're 100%, because there's still a significant amount of the family members of the McNultys that are in the Harkins, the Nalises. These are all related into these families. So there's a lot of these people here as well. And we're lucky too to have Kay's granddaughter, Naomi, is visiting here tonight. She's going to be our guest to unveil the plaques for us. She is a computer developer herself, very much inspired by her grandmother. And she talks fondly about Kay and the kind of very down-to-earth person she was. And so it's nice to have that connection, to think that we'll have someone who travelled all the way from San Francisco to be here just to unveil our plaque, you know, that people will enjoy for many years to come.
I mean, legacy is really important, but that's a particularly beautiful legacy to inspire your granddaughter to continue in the same field that you did. I mean, what an impact to have on another human. I think it's remarkable. We shouldn't forget, of course, because this is all about Kay being one of the world's first computer programmers. And you can imagine all she would have had to overcome to get to the top of her field. It's a remarkable story right across the county, and actually not least in Chrysler and surrounding areas, Eamon. We have trailblazers. Sorry to use that word again, but, you know, that... either stayed here or went from here and were incredibly, incredibly influential.
Oh, yeah, wholeheartedly. I mean, I suppose Kay maybe didn't get the full recognition during her lifetime, I think, of what she actually had achieved. Now, it was interesting that the first computer that she helped to pioneer program, the ENIAC, was designed by a guy called Dr. John Mockley and Press Eckhart. Now, Kay ultimately ended up marrying John Mockley. So the pioneer who designed the first reprogrammed computer and one of the very first programmers ended up having a family. So you can imagine the family are deeply embedded in the history of all this. But Trailblazer is what she was. There was just six women who had to learn to program that. The device was actually designed and constructed, but even at that point, it wasn't fully and sure how it would work. So it took Kay and those women to actually go from the grassroots up to learn every aspect of the machine. Now, this isn't a small machine now like we have our laptops at home. This is a machine that had over 18,000 valves in it. It was about 1,800 feet in floor space, and it weighed around 30 tons. This thing was absolutely a behemoth of a machine, but that's what set the path for the first programmable computer, and that's the legacy that we see today. It paved the way for the connected computer generated in the computer world we live in today. Yeah. You can put it down to just a handful of those people.
I mean, everything, the mobile phone that people have in their hands, the laptops you mentioned, the computer on which we're streaming, space exploration, do you know what I mean? Everything really in some way.
Health, everything, yeah.
Yeah, you can health, understand it all goes back to
everything,
that.
Everything, you know. Yeah. It all goes back to that there. And initially, it was ENIAC was to help work out trajectories during the Second World War. This is what it was primarily developed for. But it never saw active service during that time. So afterwards, it was used for primarily peaceful means to solve like engineering problems and things like this. And that's the way that was. It was used right up until the 1950s, until it was superseded by the next generation computer, which they helped to pioneer as well.
Yeah. Okay. And I presume you didn't have to beg Naomi to come over because, you know, it's a great honour to the families that you mentioned, not least the McNulty's and her direct descendants, the likes of Naomi Most. It's lovely for them to see Kay getting the recognition now that you quite rightly pointed out that perhaps has taken up until recently to really be given to her.
I think it's a proud time for them. They grew up, in that environment of their parents being technology pioneers, but they always kept a strong connection with Chrysla and Donegal. That was always foremost in Kay's life throughout her life. So the fact that they think that we're doing something here for them, I know it means a lot to them. I'd be in regular contact with Kay's daughter Ginny in America, who unfortunately couldn't attend, and also her son Bill. They'll get to attend here in the future, and it'll be nice when they do get here. To see that, you know, what Kay's legacy does mean for the people of Chrysla, what it can mean possibly to the next generation. But we'll have a bit of fun tonight now with the like of Naomi here as well. She's going to talk more about Kay and the type of person she was and all that when we're here. So we look forward to that as well.
Isn't it quite remarkable, Eamon, how things have progressed when we're talking about someone so influential in the creation of something that we all benefit from and use from in directly and indirectly? And you talk of, you know, her children still being alive and her granddaughter travelling over and still very active in that field. Isn't it astonishing how from that acorn, this incredibly large oak, for all its faults at times, has grown in such a short period of time? Like, you know, it's history, but my word, it's not that far removed from now.
No. And it's funny, I suppose, the twists of fate in Kay's life that ultimately saw her been born in Chrysla. She grew up here until, as a native Irish speaker, until she's about 3 or maybe 4 years old, and that's when the family emigrated. She arrived in America as a native Irish speaker and hadn't a word of English, but by the time she started school, she could speak English. You know, she was very bright. So the twists and turns of fate that ultimately led her to go to college to study mathematics, to find a job that was where a mathematician was required, as opposed to just something like teaching, for example. So she, you know, it's all those quirks that have led her to the path that she was. So it's a remarkable story that's what got her to the position that has ultimately helped to change the world we live in today, you know.
All right, so it's going to be a lovely, dry, bright evening at 6:30 p.m. at the corner of the garden in Chrysla Town. It is. It's going to be a lovely, dry, bright evening.
Thanks to heavens, yes.
And I think it's going to be a lovely family event, and I think particularly for young people as well to go along to with their families And, you know, especially to be able to hear from Naomi too, because it's amazing, one little event in life can change your path in life as well. And who's to say someone might not be influenced this evening to become the next Kay McNulty. Fair play to you, Eamon, and all at the Chrysler Community Association for pursuing this and bringing it to fruition. And I hope you have a wonderful evening, and I'm sure you will. And it's just a great thing. So we appreciate you coming on with us today.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much for your time, Greg. That's really good. And say everybody's welcome. And thanks again for having us on.
No, it's our pleasure. It's 6:30 tonight at the corner of the garden of Chrysler Town, or in Chrysler Town. It's a newly created monument unveiled in Chrysler to honour the pioneering work of the late Kay McNulty, one of the world's first computer programmers. And just whilst I'm not using this as an opportunity, as a cheap way, by the way, to plug things. But we also spoke to Dr. Joe Kelly about Chrysler, and it was in the wake of the awful tragedy that visited that village and many others beyond it, all of us, the country and beyond as well. And we also we took a time to reflect on the history of Chrysler, and it has an incredibly interesting and rich history. It's so if you fancy passing a half an hour or so. Maybe it's an hour. I can't recall how long it is. But anyway, go on to YouTube and type Highland Radio Chrysler or Dr. Joe Kelly Chrysler and watch that and listen to it, whichever way you prefer. As I say, I hope you'd find it really, really interesting. I want to say a very happy birthday, if you don't mind, to Anne Peoples, who is in St. Johnston. And Anne is celebrating her 70th birthday today. Happy birthday to you, Anne, from all of us here at Highland Radio in the 9 till noon show, of course, but also from... the family. Hope you have a wonderful day. Let us get to some more comments that have been coming in. Hi, Greg. Just thought I'd let you know I'm 48 years old, and 2 weeks ago I was waiting 33 hours in the AE in Letterkenny, the ED that is. I was waiting for a CT scan. There needs to be a better system. I mean, that's just 33 hours waiting for a CT scan. Another caller says, Gardaí should never work with people who wear masks to hide their identity. It gives a very bad impression, especially when the subject is as sensitive as an eviction. We haven't forgotten the very emotive time in our history when families were evicted and their homes destroyed. Many will use this comparison to further their own agenda. Indeed. And that's why I was trying to have the conversation not in the context of was it an appropriate way to make the point? Morning, Greg. Listening to the councillor, I wonder, is this why the powers that be don't want Sinn Féin in government? They'll uncover a lot that are 11 years of the same government are hiding. Just a thought, thank you. Well, I don't think a government may necessarily... Do you know what actually will be very interesting? To see how quickly some of these reports are published if there is a change in government, and that is by no means guaranteed. But we shall see how quickly these reports get published thereafter. A caller says it is public money that was spent after the flood. People, we have a right to know what it was spent on. Truckloads of skips leaving the hospital. Where did it go? A caller says my dad was in hospital last weekend. His GP sent him and the care he got was amazing. I never in my life seen crowds like it at the ED. The staff that we met were stretched to the limit, and some of them from other wards called in to cover short staff situations. I'm not sure what's needed to help with the overcrowding EDs, but something needs to change. Good luck with the new Pathway Initiative. Well, listen, as we said in our conversation with John Joe, the Pathway Initiative is not in and of itself going to change it, but hopefully it's one of the measures that can be employed that will help. That's all we can hope for. And looking at the numbers from John Joe there, that it might prevent attending the hospital, you can see it's bound to have some level of an impact. Whether or not we as users see it, hopefully the staff do. When are these delays going to stop? I had thought the new HSC premises in Buncrana were going to carry out x-rays too. Is it still only used for the doctors? I'm not really quite sure the answer to that question. A caller says, I feel, this is as it relates to weight loss, I feel that there needs to be so much more psychological preparation for those going the surgery route. It seems that there is in Ireland, but from having close friends who went to Turkey, it seems it's more about the physical preparation and aftercare. The physical side seems to be really well planned and followed up on, but given the huge surgery, it is the psychological side needs huge, huge improvements. And I think you're onto something there. But also in terms of the aftercare, it has to be said it is the HSE that ends up picking up on that. I know that because we had one of the gentlemen who does the aftercare. And some of there are complications with some of it, according to our conversation with him. Okay, listen, that's where we have to leave it for today's show. Thank you to all of you who listened to the show, watched the show, engaged it in any which way. It's really appreciated. We're back with you tomorrow morning, bright and early, hopefully at 9 o'clock. Stay tuned. John Breslin's coming up around the Northwest. But for me, Greg Hughes, Carolyn Orr, who researched and produced the show, and Anya Sweeney working as well with us. Have a great day.